Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Every day I get to you.
Magic bus.
To get on the bus that takes me to you.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. If you're heading out on the road this weekend, why not consider booking yourself into a rock and roll hotel? From Milwaukee to L.A. to London, some hotels have been made famous by the hijinks of rock bands that have stayed there. Others have a special rock allure of their own, and Stephen Kuritz recently wrote about such hotels for the New York Times and has joined us here in our studio. Stephen, welcome.
Welcome.
What makes a hotel a rock and roll hotel?
I think there are several things. One is that it's usually in a cool part of town, like the Continental Hyatt in L.A. was near the Roxy and the Whiskey, so rock stars could just sort of party or whatever and trample back to the hotel. The other thing is that if it has a hotel bar or sort of caters to rock stars in a specific way, like a 24-hour room service, because rock stars
unusual hours.
They keep strange hours, exactly.
Checking in early in the day is okay.
That's a big one. For hotels that cater to rock stars, that's a big thing, because you may roll into town at 9 in the morning and you need a room.
Right. Does a hotel become a rock and roll hotel because of prior experience with bands?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. A lot of bands, musicians on the road are sort of like truckers. They travel a lot, so they share information, a diner here or a hotel there, and it sort of gets circulated. And then the other thing is that you want a hotel with a relaxed attitude. The Continental Hyatt House didn't mind Keith Richards throwing a TV set out the window. So
they were okay with that.
Yeah, they were fine with that. So that's sort of an important thing,
So there's certainly a practical reason, maybe several practical reasons, for rockers to be interested in these hotels. What about for just the rest of us, for tourists? I mean, is there a specific allure, a George Washington slept here kind of thing?
There's sort of that, especially with hotels where a rock star died, like the Chelsea Hotel. People sometimes ask for room 100, which is where Sid Vicious apparently or supposedly stabbed Nancy Spungen. I talked to a road manager who said one of his bands insisted on staying at the hotel where Sam Cooke died. If you're sort of a big rock fan, it's kind of cool to stay at the Chelsea or the Hyatt.
Now, can you stay in the Chelsea and actually get the Sid and Nancy room?
I've heard that they get so much requests that you cannot, that it's forbidden. Okay. You cannot get the Sid and Nancy room.
All right. Now, you wrote in your article for the Times, I'll quote here, "Rock bands and hotels have a long and checkered history, one that has tended to involve property damage."
Right. That's the classic cliched rock hotel story. And there are several. I mentioned in the article the Faces, who did so much damage to hotels that they were banned from the Holiday Inn, several chains, and then they would register under the Who. And then the Who would be banned from hotels.
The Who, they were no angels either.
Right. There's a famous Keith Moon story, which some people say it's true, some people say it's not. But the story goes that on his 21st birthday in Flint, Michigan, he drove a Rolls Royce into the hotel pool and, freaked the management out.
Isn't there also a story? Isn't he the one who nailed his furniture to the ceiling?
That's right. He nailed his room furniture. I just heard a really good story the other day about Joe Walsh. He was on that show Rockline, and he was talking about it, which is that in the heyday of the Eagles, when they were, doing a lot of coke and ego, maniacs, he used to take a chainsaw and cut up his hotel room furniture. And
I always thought he was the most interesting of the Eagles when he joined that band.
That takes some forethought.
So, has anybody actually done any sort of psychological work on why musicians, when they're out on the road, feel this need to kind of trash the place that is, for the moment, home?
Well, in the article, I sort of quote Ian McLaughlin from The Faces, who said that they used to stay in Holiday Inns, and they were sort of neat and clean, but they were so soul-destroying that you just couldn't look at a Holiday Inn in 20 different cities and not want to just hurt it a little, you know. So, and the other thing is, I think, because they can. I mean, like with Joe Walsh, his manager used to just, when he would pull out the chainsaw, his manager would just give, like $100 bills to the hotel management.
Right.
So
that's why they didn't care if Keith Richard threw the TV set out the window, because there was someone there with a wad of bills to take care
exactly.
of it.
Exactly, and it becomes legendary.
Right. And then the hotel becomes part of legend as well.
Right.
We're speaking with Stephen Kuritz, who has written about rock and roll hotels for the New York Times. Now, today, we don't seem to hear so much about, our contemporary rockers going out and trashing their hotel rooms.
It's true. The contemporary rocker seems to be, I don't want to say all of them, but they seem to be a more docile animal. I talked to the singer of this band, Metric, Emily Haynes, and she was saying that they stay at the Hotel Roosevelt sometimes, or not the Hotel Roosevelt, but the Rivington in New York, which is like a $400 a night, hotel. And she was saying she loves the Tempur-Pedic mattresses of, the hotel room.
Well, so. Now, Metric, the last time they were in town, they were opening for the Rolling Stones.
Right,
so
right.
Presumably,
so
they could afford the...
Exactly. They'll say in sort of cheap hotels in the middle of the country, and when they get to the coasts, they treat themselves.
I see.
Yeah.
So for the contemporary musician, it's more about having a gym, having wireless, being able to get the laptop going.
That's right. One of the rock managers I talked to said that used to be a hotel bar was the thing. You had to have a hotel bar, but people don't party as much. And now the number one and number two things are high-speed internet and a gym.
Mm-hmm. Having produced a number of concerts here in New York over the years, I've noticed that by the end of concerts these days, there's still beer in the fridge, but the water's all gone.
Right, exactly. I never.
Wasn't that way at the beginning?
No, I didn't. Growing up, I didn't think musicians were health conscious or cared too much about the gym.
All right. Now, is this specific to rock? I mean, are other genres of music? Is there a different relationship with the hotel industry?
Right. Well, country musicians often stay on buses. They don't. A lot of times, they won't stay in hotels. They sort of rig up these tour buses. Willie Nelson is really famous for that. He almost sort of lives on the bus. And I talked to a travel agent in L.A. who said that smooth jazz guys like upscale accommodations,
uh-huh.
like Dave Koz or your Kenny G types.
So Kenny G is going to want that Posturepedic mattress
right.
wherever he goes.
Right, and the real sort of swanky lounge and whatnot.
All right. And what about for the rest of us? I mean, for the folks who want to be... in the hotel where Keith Moon nailed the furniture to the ceiling or whatever.
Right.
I mean, do these hotels, they know that they're getting a certain amount of those kinds of people?
Yeah. The hotels I wrote about were primarily, they catered to rock musicians. And when you cater to rock musicians, you sort of expect a certain amount of hijinks and also a certain amount of people coming to try to see them. The Phoenix is one that's sort of really well known in San Francisco, and sometimes, not often, sometimes groupies will show up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, of course, there's the whole question of the entourage, which is kind of the super groupies, I suppose, and that's a question that we will tackle in our next segment. But for the moment, we've been speaking with Stephen Kuritz, writer and frequent contributor to the New York Times, about his recent article about rock and roll hotels, just in time for summer travel season. Stephen, thanks very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to email us, we'd like to hear what you think. Our email address is soundcheck@wnyc.org. As I say, there are legions of HBO viewers out there who know that every star has an entourage. We'll hear about the agents, the attorneys, the publicists, the girlfriends, and more that make up a musician's entourage. And later, the cult opera diva Ava Podlish talks about her one-of-a-kind voice. This is Soundcheck.